Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're recording on Tuesday night, April the 8th. We are in the midst of week three of the Major League Baseball and fantasy baseball season. And this podcast, as always, presented by Underdog Fantasy. I'm Vlad Sedler at RotoGut. And with me again, back from his family vacation, Mr. Jason Anthony at Boom 62. What's going on, Jason?
Vlad, what up, man? I was having some Vlad withdrawals, so I'm happy to be back talking to you. I missed talking some ball. I'm glad Mike held my seat down, didn't take it from me, yet at least. He did a great job, but I'm glad to be back talking some baseball with you.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we're only 2.5 weeks into the season, and it's been absolute bananas. I'm assuming every other podcast everywhere is talking about this insanity with all the pitchers in Major League Baseball and what's been going on. And I'm guessing you've been kind of tracking it pretty closely. Give me your, just like your overall kind of like, not elevator pitch, but just your high level. And how has it been affecting you, and your teams personally?
One word for me, it's carnage. I think this year more than any year, it's going to be a war of attrition. You know, it's hard to point fingers what's going on with all the injuries, but it sure seems like these pitchers' elbows are not meant to maximize spin rates, velocity at this length of starting that we're doing nowadays. So I think it's just going to be a matter of time before your pitcher goes down. Hopefully you can get some good starts. I had a ton of Shane Bieber, you know, RIP. For the year. At least he got me 20 strikeouts in two games and a win. So, you know, it's one of those things. It really is hard to watch your pitcher get blown up. It's even harder to get news that your pitcher's out for an extended period of time or the year. But I was reading some tweets. I forget who it was, but they're talking about, you know, this is the fun part about fantasy baseball. Now this is the puzzle. You have an injury. Now you got to figure it out. You got to work harder than everybody else. You got to find the diamond in the rough. I thought that was Graham Ashcraft through four innings yesterday, and then the manager left him out there for two more, and then he turned back into dust. So it's going to be a grind now, but I'm not the only owner going through that.
Yeah, it's everywhere, and of course, so much has to do with the way that we respond and react to things. And I feel that, I mean, me myself, over the period of looking back to where I was as a fantasy player 10 years ago, one of the things that I've adjusted with is my reactions and responses to what's going on. And I feel like that's an edge and a bit of an advantage, because you've got a lot of people that, I mean, rightfully so. I mean, you spent a very high draft pick on Spencer Strider. He's your first round pick. Everything seemed to be fine health-wise before the season, and that happens. And then couple that with Shane Bieber and Yuri Perez and Framber Valdez and just the fury of it all. It's a lot to take in. And so over time, I've really adjusted to not being, I mean, there does become a point where you become too complacent. Like, you know, am I worried about, you know, George Kirby and Max Fried off to bad starts? It's funny how now my mind has changed to like, well, hey, they're healthy and they're out there and velo seems okay. And so as long as they are healthy, you figure good pitchers like that, things will sort of regress and correct in the right manner, the way it always has for these guys over the course of their careers. But now, I mean, I just don't get as like frustrated or mad when a pitcher hangs five runs on me, because I know that's just part of the deal. That's just part of what we're going to be going through in fantasy. And luckily, a lot of my sort of late round pitchers, the guys that have been really good targets, I mean, this is what I'm feeling really good about right now. Ask me in 2 weeks, it could be a different story. But my Garrett Whitlocks, Garrett Crochets, Ronaldo Lopez is the guys I targeted heavily. Those guys are really doing well. And it balances out a little bit when my Kirby or Fried or whomever gets blasted. But still, it's better, I guess, than maybe some people that are getting blasted by their early round pitchers and their late round pitchers. Yeah, and then just
Go ahead, Vlad.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, you tweeted today, you know, an unpopular take. I think George Kirby's going to be just fine. I think that's pretty common sense. The guy's a good pitcher. If he's healthy, he's going to be good. Max Fried, two starts, looks terrible, but guess what? He's on the mound. His velo's up. He's a pretty good pitcher. So if he's pitching, he's going to be fine. It's two starts. There's 30 starts coming, hopefully, for these guys. Everything equals out normally back of the baseball card. So,
and then just as far as the overall, like what's wrong, I mean, I think it's a very correct assessment that we're hearing from guys like the professionals, the guys that are doing this, the Justin Verlanders. Alex Wood had a little tweet string that made a lot of sense, Garrett Cole, and where it's the level of competition. Like years ago, these guys wouldn't pitch for a couple of months. They'd take a couple of months off. Now, like that level of competition is much higher. These guys have to be pitching year round. They're so focused on, you know, the Statcast metrics, the stuff metrics, and they're pushing full throttle to something that isn't really humanly sustainable. And so that's why we're seeing this high, part of the reason why we're seeing this high rate of season ending injuries. And then you throw in the pitch clock. That's of course a factor. I think 2020 season, that thing definitely threw a curve into everything. And then just the way spring training is done, where a lot of these pitchers, they're just going 2, 3, 4 innings. They're not getting fully stretched out. And then they have to kind of, you know, just kind of get right into it once the season starts. And I think that has an effect. So it's all these things collectively that are happening. And yeah, I mean, I believe there's going to be eventually, I mean, it's just kind of like a cyclical tipping point, I guess you could say, where, I mean, throwing hard will always be important. It's, you know, it's a primary factor, but things are going to change a little bit, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. You know, it's such a unique situation we're in, because these guys are basically pitching to make $200-300 million. So why would they slow down? You know, if anybody watches the pitching motion in general, it is bad for the elbow. It is not a natural motion throwing the baseball overhand. So it's not a matter of if anymore. It's a matter of when. These guys just keep going harder and harder, you said. And, you know, it's just they have to. It's keeping up with the Joneses. And it's going to keep impacting us in fantasy. And it's what are the changes we're going to make as fantasy players to counteract it? Are we going to draft more starters? Are we going to do more middle relievers? Are we going to do more less velocity guys and more Chris Bassett's? You know, he came out and said the elbow's not meant to throw over 92 miles an hour, but Shane Bieber wasn't throwing over 92 miles an hour. We lost him. So, you know, I made a list. Strider out, Bieber out, Framber out, Pivetta out, Yuri Perez out, Garrett Cole out, maybe coming back, Kodai Senga out, maybe coming back, Chase Silseth now out, Justin Steele hurt hammy, Brian Wu out, Josiah Gray out, Kyle Bradish out, possible return, Giolito out, Taj Bradley injured, and now Sawyer Gibson Long, promising Detroit pitcher, out. My goodness, this is what, week two?
Yeah, two and a half.
Do you really think it's done? I mean, it's not done. It's just getting started, so it's crazy, isn't it?
It's wild, and then we've got a couple of these guys actually on the mend. So you've got Kodai Senga and Kyle Bradish and Justin Verlander, Braxton Garrett. Like, all these guys are coming back soon. Garrett, I think, is him and Edward Cabrera on the Marlins are the next guys expect to be back. Verlander the following week. Michael Lorenzen was dealing with a neck and just getting, you know, back up to speed since he signed with the Rangers. He's back probably next week. And we'll talk a little bit about that later, because I'm curious your take about something going on in that rotation. But do you have any of those guys? I mean, did you just kind of stop drafting them when they got hurt, or did you get into the Bradish or Verlander or Senga markets at all?
I think I stashed a Bradish and had to move on with a couple of the other injuries. Hopefully don't regret it. I do like Kyle Bradish. I'm rooting for him. No Senga, no Verlander, no Scherzer. I do have one or two Braxton Garrett. The price got to a point I thought it was worth it, and I think he's a pretty good pitcher. And then, you know, I have some Walker Buehler stashes. And I think he was kind of a target for me because he was healthy coming back from the injury. It wasn't like he was coming off an injury. He was throwing last year, so fingers crossed with Walker Buehler coming back. He looks good in the minors. It's challenging, isn't it? It's just the landscapes is just, it's crazy. And we forget how bad it is every year. It's bad every year. This year just seems to be worse.
Yeah. And then, and Braxton Garrett, he is not a, you know, he's not a big velocity guy. I mean, he's a guy that throws a 90, 91 mile per hour fastball. He's got a pretty decent slider, mixes in, you know, basically a mix of, I think, four or five pitches. So, yeah, I think he's a pretty solid lefty. Coming back, I think, is really going to help that rotation. Speaking of that rotation, what's going to change here? AJ Puck basically got a little bit of a stay of execution, right? I mean, he didn't look great against the Yankees on Tuesday night, but he didn't really give up a lot of damage, and that's now two starts in a row there and against the Angels, where, I mean, the control isn't there. He's walking guys, but kind of limiting the damage. Do you think he comes into his own? What do you think? I mean, I tweeted about a few days ago about the ideal scenario, and this sucks for, yeah, if you're a Tanner Scott guy. I mean, I have some Tanner Scott, but AJ Puck is a closer. I mean, he was so dominant at it last year, and you got Garrett and Ekab coming back. I mean, how do you think things shake out just in general, looking at this team like 3 months from now? What are things looking like?
I mean, look at Michael Kopech today. The guy is just electric out of the pen. And I think AJ Puck has that same skill set. Some guys just aren't built to start. And it sure looks like AJ Puck is that. But that arm is really good. How do they keep him healthy? How do they keep him efficient? You know, if it's AJ Puck or Max Meyer, I think Meyer is staying in the rotation. You know, who's the next shoe to drop? But I would definitely think Puck's got a chance to close here sooner than later, because I think Tanner Scott just walked somebody else, and he's not even pitching. The guy has lost the strike zone again as maybe a one-year wonder, but I don't want to root for that for him. I have a couple shares, but it's a little – I definitely don't want to watch him pitch right now.
Yes. I mean, that actually goes for a lot of my pitchers. And even today in the Braves game, I turned on the Braves game when the I think it was like three innings in, Ronaldo Lopez was, you know, a couple of walks, maybe a hit, no runs allowed. And as soon as I turned on the TV, boom, gives up a hit. I'm like, you know, I got to turn this off. And I really don't believe in that kind of stuff and jinxes and things like that. But just, I don't know. I just get a little crazy. I don't really necessarily want to always watch my starting pitchers, though I should. I will watch the highlights afterwards, or, you know, maybe early in a game or something like that. But for the most part, I'm kind of scared to do so. But that rotation, by the way, Anthony Bender pitched the eighth, I believe, with Andrew Nardi pitching the seventh. Nardi's actually looked good, a little better. If you remember, he got rocked the first couple of appearances in late March, early April, and he's bounced back a little bit. Bender actually he's given up a few runs, hits, walks as well, and he hasn't been all that great. But yeah, it is kind of a messy scenario there. And then with Edward Cabrera and Garrett coming back, I mean, by that point, one of these guys will be hurt. You know, that's how it works. And then, I mean, who else is gone, right? I feel like this is kind of a last stand for Ryan Weathers. Ryan Weathers has done nothing wrong since spring training. He's been phenomenal since he's gotten to Miami. He's been great. And even his first couple starts, he's been solid. But something's got to give here. Trevor Rogers, I think, a little bit more experience. I don't necessarily see them pulling back, but when one or two of these guys come back, you know, Max Meyer, he shouldn't be sent down, right? So something's got to give here. So I just don't know what that's going to be.
Yeah, especially the way these teams continue to manage innings, which continues to prove ineffective, in my opinion. I mean, Yuri Perez, way to manage him with kid gloves, Marlins. He, not like you prevented him from getting hurt. So yeah, these guys are not going to pitch more than 130 innings. So there's going to be rotations. There's going to be real injuries. There's going to be fake injuries, but it usually takes care of itself. When that pitcher's coming off the IL, there'll be somebody else ready to go on it, or demoted or whatever. Yeah. Weathers is interesting. The velo's up. The results haven't really performed since the bell rang, but the stuff looks good. So yeah, it'll be interesting who gets sent out. I think Puck might be the first one to go, like you were saying.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then another interesting scenario is with the Texas Rangers, because we know Eovaldi's locked in. John Gray is locked in, though he has just not looked good. And we'll see how he does against the A's this week. And then Dane Dunning is locked in. And so there are two spots for Cody Bradford, Andrew Heaney, and Michael Lorenzen, who's now coming into the rotation. And Cody Bradford has been excellent, absolutely excellent since the spring, and one of the best performing pitchers so far, just a couple of starts, but in the major leagues. And then he's going to get the A's. If that start goes well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not the Rangers management. I'm not Bochy. I'm not making these decisions, obviously, but I don't know, man. I've always a little biased, but like Andrew Heaney to me is kind of the guy out. He's a guy that can, I think, perform maybe in shorter spurts, a couple innings of reliefs. He's the guy that I would move out. I will say he's been quite unlucky. It's just been two starts, but in those two starts, Velo is slightly down on the fastball, about 1.5 miles per hour. And he's got a, 7.5 ERA. His xERA, by the way, is 1.5. The guy has a 34% left on base strand rate. So
is that bad?
Other than that, I mean, like, you know, it's just like in those two starts, just one single barrel given up. Now, for me, Andrew Heaney has always been just a guy I just don't touch in fantasy. That one good year, I had a couple of shares, but other than that, like, just not into him and his style, because I mean, I don't know. It's just, again, going back to the ratio snobs thing, guys that with a, you know, 4.5 career ERA really aren't my thing. But Cody Bradford's been excellent. I just wonder, I don't really have insight there, but I'm wondering how things shake out, because I feel like Bradford deserves a shot.
Yeah, I don't think they need to be in a hurry with Lorenzen coming back. They might give him an extra rehab or minor league start and kind of let it play out. But Heaney looks like he's going to be the first one to go. And like you said, his stuff might play up in the bullpen a lot better than anybody else in that current rotation as well.
As for the way that we might be dealing with in-season free agency with the pitchers and setting our lineups, I mean, what happens if this flurry continues? So if it's, I mean, it's not going to at this rate. I mean, it just kind of doesn't make sense that you're going to be losing 3-4 guys a week at this point, but there'll be guys here and there. But if for whatever reason it does kind of continue at somewhat close to this pace of like losing key guys, at some point, do we all just freak out and start to load up on, you know, the Shelby Miller types, the back end rotation guys, you know, the guys that aren't quite getting saves, but have been pretty good with ratios, the Aroldis Chapmans of the world. He's pretty much taken, I think, in all main events, the Matt Stroms of the world, the couple inning relievers. Is that the way we might be going? And is that a good idea?
I mean, wins are still king, right? So wins come from starting pitchers. You know, relievers are such a fluke when it comes to wins. You can kind of fall into a guy that gets those 8 to 10 wins, but as a community, I think we might go one extra middle reliever, or, you know, one extra 2 to 3 inning reliever guy. But I still think we're gonna need to search for those good matchups and kind of pick on those bad offenses, pick on the White Sox, pick on the A's, pick on the Tigers. I can't pick on the Pirates anymore. They're actually pretty good and they keep blowing up my starters. So they'll keep it rolling. But yeah, I don't think we can get away from the starters. It's just going to be very sketchy. You're going to start looking at A's starters, even Rockies on the road, who are just a hard pass every time. Road Rockies. And it's just, you got to adapt, right? And just try to avoid that, the Austin Gomber, which bit me in the butt a couple of years ago. That was a 2-start road week against my Giants. And I was driving to Oregon listening to that. And it was not a pleasant experience.
I remember it well, very, very well. Gombard, that's where it all started. By the way, last season, there were 59 pitchers total that had double-digit wins, so 10 or more wins. And a few relievers in that mix, and pretty random. Tampa's Colin Poche had 12 wins. And if you remember Mike Bauman of the Baltimore Orioles, he had a 10-1 record. So pretty crazy random stuff. Matt Strom had 9 wins, and then Ginkle was 9-1 as well. So, I mean, you see the rate at which things have been happening in Detroit, a team that isn't that great of an offense, but just based on their matchups and playing the White Sox, whatnot, and they're, you know, winning these close games and things have just lined up perfectly for them. It's like the Shelby Miller win with the Jason Foley save has happened on Tuesday nights. I mean, that's going to continue all year. Shelby Miller's not going to win 22 games. He'll nick us in some save opportunities, things like that. But those are still, there's still some value in that. I think it depends on the way your roster is constructed. Obviously in a 12 teamer, you're not really starting Shelby Miller unless you're completely, you know, just don't have a lot of good closers or anything. But in the 15 teamer, you're looking at your sixth starting pitcher. That might be a dicey one and a tough start versus a Shelby Miller with like seven games on the schedule and they're not facing the Braves or they're not in Cincinnati. Those are plays that make sense for the week.
Yeah. When you're prioritizing Graham Ashcraft and Jake Irvin on fab bids, middle relievers are starting to look a little better.
This is true. A couple other things here. Max Scherzer nearing live batting practice. I'm actually not even, I'm not even sure how main event drafters, did everybody draft him? Was he drafted pretty much in every league?
Yeah.
And held.
I don't believe he is. I'm pretty sure he's 100%. I can check real quick while you're talking.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's obviously going to be nice. And again, we have no idea. I mean, you're waiting on a guy, could have another setback. It could be pushed to June. Like, you can't just bake on these things like, oh, Scherzer's coming back, he's going to save my team. Because remember last season, there was a stretch of a very kind of rare bad Scherzer that that didn't play well. And it was quite shocking. And so that happens a lot. And, you know, it also reminds me of something that I think is important to bring up about rest of season analysis. And when, I guess when someone asks me a question, you know, player X versus player Y ROS, rest of season. And I try to, I guess, like the way that my brain is now wired for fantasy baseball for a few years now is I'm not really looking at rest of season, especially if you're talking about fringe guys. If you're going to ask me Edward Olivares versus Connor Joe rest of season, my answer will be who's playing. Okay, maybe that's not a good example, but say like a guy like Olivares who faces mostly righties versus a guy that's a bunch of lefties. My question is, who are they facing this week? Can I use them on my team this week? So for me, the rest of the season stuff is tough. Like if you ask me even, you know, Juan Soto versus Fernando Tatis, I mean, most people's answers will be, I mean, quite frankly, BS, because it's okay. Who's going to stay healthy? We can't predict it. Secondly, it's going to be partially influenced by what those guys did just a couple days ago. If Soto hasn't homered in a week and Tatis is coming off two games with three home runs, 90% of people are going to say Tatis. So there's just so much of this. This is not, you know, not trying to go on a soapbox or anything. I'm not trying to say, oh, you know, this is the right way. That's just the way that I think. And that's the way I analyze. If someone's asking me a rest of season question, I want to dig in and ask more, like, what's your roster look like? Who's on your bench? Is this player expendable? Who are they facing this week? Olivares facing a bunch of righties or a bunch of lefties. Great. Let's get him in the lineup over this guy who's not going to play this week. Let's like Jock Peterson against a bunch of lefties. He's not going to, or against a bunch of lefties, not going to be in the lineup. So
yeah,
that's it.
You know, I think you're onto something though. This has turned into not DFS, but kind of a modified DSS where it's a weekly game, not a year long game anymore. Especially around the fringes on the 15 teams you have, you know, you're starting 23 guys, nine pitchers, 14 hitters, you know, 30%, 40% of them are going to be rotating throughout your roster, and you got to find the best weekly matchup. And I've been guilty of it really bad to kind of hold on to the guys because I liked them or they're struggling, but not to try to replace them for that next week, trying to find the rest of the season guy. And so if you attack it week by week, you can perform a lot better in these marathons rather than just trying to hold on to the guy because of name. I did look it up. Max Scherzer was actually not drafted in five main events. He was drafted in 52 out of 57 main events. So that's going to be a nice significant fab bid put on once he comes back.
last thing I'll mention here, Anthony Rendon, I went from this preseason, I avoided him like the absolute plague. I went against my practice of this is game is not personal. This is business. I'm drafting teams and I should just be just kind of drafting the best players. But I kind of put a stamp. I just no draft Anthony Rendon policy, like no matter what. And that stance has softened a little bit in Fab. I do not still have any Anthony Rendon shares, but in Cutline this week, I bid on him because, hey, he is healthy right now. He is leading off for the Angels. I don't know how things are going to be in a week. We kind of know a lot of times where things go for him, but it's baseball. It's so unpredictable. You don't know what is going to happen. And I'm not going to, if I'm hurting at third base, like if I drafted Royce Lewis and Josh Jung, and I'm now like having to stream Wilmer Flores, I'm not going to stubbornly continue to stream a Wilmer Flores if Anthony Rendon's sitting there in waivers and he's leading off for the Angels and, you know, he's got Trout behind him and he's feeling it. Like you just got to ride the wave. I mean, in 3 weeks he could be done and I'll get rid of him. But I just wanted to mention that because I thought it was funny that I went from like no Rendon at all to like, hey, this is fantasy and should be personal. And I need to just kind of stick with my, you know, it's a business process.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we're accumulating stats, and it doesn't matter what the name of that player is that's getting them for you. So whoever has the most home runs, RBIs, runs, batting average, stolen bases is going to be the most valuable guy. It doesn't matter if he plays on a team you hate or it's a player you hate or player you love. So before we move on from all this starting pitcher debacle we were talking about, I need to get on a soapbox real quick, Vlad, and I apologize if I'm going to rub anybody the wrong way, but for everybody victory lapping after 2 weeks, I'm all for being stoked that your guy pitched well, that your guys are performing. Hey, be excited. That's the whole fun of doing this, but for people that are excited about somebody getting hurt for the year or somebody struggling in two starts, they're in for a rude awakening. Karma is very quick and very spiteful. And if you're truly celebrating injury or poor performance, it's coming for your ace. Just be ready. And there's a lot of people having a lot of fun on Twitter right now that are going to be very solemn and quiet here in a month or two, I would have to say.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's interesting you say that, like, because so today I was watching the Cole Reagans start and saw Houston kind of lapping him. And I'm not going to publicly root against players, but I did not draft Reagans at ADP. And I don't know, there are just so many pitchers in the pool that I like. This is not like a victory lap in and of itself, by the way. It's just like, I don't have any of him. I did not want to get Tarik Skubal in the second, third round. So I'm kind of unofficially rooting against them. But I'm doing that privately. Like, I'm not going to be, oh my God, Reagan's got blasted. Yeah, put him in a body bag, Johnny. Like, I'm not going to do that. I believe in that karma. Karma has struck me hard in many times. In fact, it happens when, you know, when I would even post standings in the middle of the season. Just, you know, like certain things like that. Like any sort of like obvious bragging. And listen, I'm guilty of it. I showboat. I, you know, kind of accentuate the, you know, the gut brand and all that. I kind of do it like for fun. I try not to get myself too heated. And I notice myself sometimes getting that way, or I'll see something and be like, oh wait, that seems personal. And I just need to remember, this is fun. This is a game. But that's the one thing I will not get involved in. I don't want to get involved in that bad business of like, pooping on other people or players. And I will never do that. Also, I mean, you might even see me if I'm kind of saying something negative about a player and hey, listen, this might be cheap as hell. And this might be makes me a total wuss, but I'll put like, if he's got an A in his name, I'll put like an at, you know, the at sign. Like, I don't need their parents searching it. I don't want to like be responsible for like somebody looking up their name or their mom looking up their name after a bad start and see, you know, and seeing like, you know, random fantasy people like, you know, making things worse, right? Like, I don't want to kind of give in to that negative energy. So by the way, if anyone ever does see me like that, it's cool. Call me out, put me in my place. I need to be, you know, everyone needs to be at some point or another, because we do have players, you know, parents that are following their kids, and it sucks, right?
Yeah, I mean, and again, like I said, if your guys are killing it, if you were on Spencer Steer and Anthony Volpe and Marcell Ozuna and Teoscar, have fun with it. They're killing it. But guess what? You got 24 more weeks to go. There's going to be ebbs and flows. But if you're excited because Spencer Strider's hurt, there's something wrong with you because he is good for baseball. I don't have any Strider on my big teams, but I would never in a million years look forward to him getting hurt. It is just bad for the game that we love to watch, and that's why we're playing it, is to have fun and to love to watch. And like I said, karma is very fickle and it is very spiteful and it comes quick. So if you're one of those guys, get ready, because it's coming.
And on that note, a note from our sponsor: if you want to make money and make money making picks on MLB games, then you got to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest way to play fantasy sports. In their Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they'll go higher or lower on several stats like hits, strikeouts, total bases. So you just pick 2 to 5 players to get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to use our promo code FTN on Underdog, and they'll double your first deposit up to $100. So you'll have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's underdogfantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with the promo code FTN. Get that first deposit doubled up to $100. You must be 18 years old or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and 21 in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. If you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, you call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. And in Tennessee, you call 1-800-889-9789. Now, just some real quick housekeeping. We're going to talk about some overperformers and underperformers. And these are a couple of really fun notes. The first one is: at FTN Fantasy, starting on Wednesday, the day that this podcast is released, we've got a new column, our most popular national person on the team, Eric Cross. Dude is like closing up on 50K followers on Twitter. Like, guys posting like every day, really, really cool stuff on his timeline. And he's got a new column coming out called Crossovers and Crossed Out. Little work there with me and Daniel Kelly, our chief editor, coming up with that name. And what it is, it's going to be kind of like a looking at hot and cold players of the last week and just kind of figuring out if they're, you know, the real deal or what. Like, you know, kind of similar to what we're going to talk about here, but what is sort of underlying within Spencer Strider to make assumptions whether he'll keep things going or kind of come back down to earth. Like, a lot of this stuff is, it's you look at the box scores every day, you're not really seeing the true story. And so Eric's going to dig into that. It's going to be a lot of fun. The second and very exciting news, and we're breaking it here first. You know what it is, Jason? I told you.
I do, Vlad. I'm excited about this one.
All right. So, as everyone knows, we've got the weekly projections, the FTN data model. It's been crushing it on the betting side and has been for many, many years. We deployed it a couple of weeks ago, so those come out this past week. It came out Monday morning. And there's a lot of back-end work that goes into it, and we want to get the first run of those weekly projections out to you as early as possible, you know, on Sunday when we can, to potentially help with your FAB decisions. There's a lot of back-end work. So who better to help us on the data side than the new addition to the team, Jenny Butler. Jenny Butler, ladies and gentlemen, the last 2 weeks, sorry, 2 years, she has 3 years actually, has contributed to the FTN Fantasy Draft Guide. She is a data scientist by trade and her day job, and she's busy. She's got a lot of stuff going on. You know, writing is just, you know, you add a column to things that she's doing, it's too much. What she likes to do and is good at is working with data, and so she's going to be a big part of our weekly projections management system. So she'll be on board with us starting this weekend. So for week 4 games, we'll get those projections out ready too. So be sure to congratulate Jenny. We'll tweet it on Wednesday.
FTN family gets stronger. Love it, Vlad.
Yeah. See it all. Yeah. You get Jason Anthony on board and then things just start blossoming. Get the,
I can take no credit for this.
All right. So let's talk some, players that are off to really good starts. What we think of it, of these things that are going on. Let's start off with my boy, Tyler O'Neill. My Lord, please keep just stay healthy, bro. Stay healthy.
This is a little blasphemous putting him in an overperformers, Vlad. This is exactly what you projected him to do, isn't it?
Well, this is a list of more overperformers is maybe not the best word. It's guys for us to look at, right? Like whether they are overperforming. I mean, he is technically overperforming because he's not going to hit whatever 3-4 home runs a week. But I mean, he could be a first round pick. That's the thing. I'm a wuss, by the way. Let's keep this theme going. So me sitting there, sitting on weeks for 2-3 weeks, cannot wrap my head around, this is like a little background, whether I want to have Jazz Chisholm as my this year's Yelich, say a Suzuki, or Tyler O'Neill. And you know this, right? Because I'm messaging you and a couple other guys just like trying to, and I just went with the guy with the highest ADP. I think it was that most recent story that kind of pulled me in. And the other part of it, again, it's not me trying to backtrack or whatever. He was a great price. It's Tyler O'Neill. It was like 200 ADP, but based on his just recent history of health and the way his body is and everything we've talked about, like it's hard for me to like fully endorse him for everybody. Just like, it's one thing for me to say draft him at 200 ADP. It's another thing to say, this is my pick that I think is going to return first round value.
Yeah, and first round value means playing 145 games. And if Tyler O'Neill can do that, he might. But I think we all know with that body type and being wound so tight, doesn't matter how much yoga he's doing, there's probably a trip to the IL coming. So, if you'd got him in your drafts and you were still vocal about him, so I would not call yourself a wuss.
He's my highest owned player.
As well he should be. Yeah. Well done.
League leading ISO, by the way. I mean, I guess that's not surprising. It's only 2 weeks. But the most important thing to me is, I mean, he did strike out a couple of times on Tuesday, hit a home run first off Corbin Burns. But basically, that was his first at bat ever as a Red Sox in Fenway, right? Because that was their home opener.
I believe, yeah, this was their home opener. So, just nice way to endear yourself to the New England crowd, huh?
Yeah, but the cool thing is he's walking a lot. And obviously the guy's not going to have an 18% walk rate, but if you're getting anything just like double digits he's not going to be like Grandal, Muncy in their walk rate prime, but 12, 13%, that could be fantastic. So, speaking of the Red Sox, it's such a long season. Like you said, it's Tristan Casas, not worried about it. The same thing he did last year, started off hella slow, just popped off in the second half. And that might correspond with a time when Tyler O'Neill is struggling or whatever. Like it's like everything is just so, cyclical is a word, but you know what I mean? Like Sadani Rafaela, he was super cheap in all the cut line drafts. Like nobody wants him now because those people were still bidding, but he hasn't done anything in a week. It's like, what have you done for me lately? But overall, he looks good out there. I don't know if you watched many Red Sox games. I mean, like he looks legit, even just like running the bases and everything he does.
And he just signed a $50 million extension, I'm fairly sure, with the Red Sox. So that means he's going to stay up even through struggles.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's Tyler O'Neill. We both feel good about him. That's good. Spencer Steer. Steer me in a direction one way or the other.
Lots of shame. Lots and lots of regrets not having any Steer. I think his price got so high in the draft champion season, I kind of just crossed him off the list. And when all the injuries started to happen in Cincinnati, I kind of focus on Christian Encarnacion Strand instead of Steer. And it freed up playing time for both of them. And I really should have given Steer a harder look, especially with the steal numbers he had last year. The guy has already got double digits RBIs for the year. And he's sitting in the middle of that lineup. And dual eligibility or triple eligibility. Man, just I missed it on that one, and it kicking myself.
I'm going to stay stubborn. I was wrong last year, or whatever shares I had were just grab midseason a cut line, but he was one of my biggest fades and very, very clear. So I'm not going to say that I'll be stubborn and say, oh, he sucks, because he doesn't. But I feel like the triple eligibility and things like that kind of just accentuated and made him his price and just like his value kind of more appealing. And everything based on last year's numbers, from mediocre 6-7% barrel rate, hard hit rate under 40%. Just, I don't know. There's just a lot of things that even the stolen bases, I feel like were, I didn't think he was going to steal double digit bags again. And I feel like he is still an above average hitter, but I don't think he is going to be this like amazing, most awesome guy. I think he will have some struggles along the way, but where I feel he got in good is it's similar to the Marcus Semien situation in 2021, where he wasn't highly hyped or anything, but there was a spring training injury to George Springer, and Marcus Semien, who was projected to hit ninth, moved up to the top of the lineup, started off hot, and just the rest of the season went off with a bang. And it feels like a similar situation with Steer, with like half the team gone, and he's just become a guy that is dependent on. He's, you know, a team leader. Like, forget how that his defense is mediocre or whatever. He needs to be in that lineup. So doesn't matter whether he's hitting, you know, second against lefties or seventh against righties. Like, he's in there, he's producing, he's a team leader, he's stepping up when they need him. So there's a lot of things I like about Spencer Steer. I just don't think he's gonna, like, you know, super all-star or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, there's something to those accumulators, though, right? That are just in there every day, just getting those 3 or 4 RBIs a week, home run, stolen base. It adds up if they're in there all year. But yeah, he's not one of the best hitters in the league by any means. It's more of the opportunity, and he does take advantage of it, it seems like.
And it's still Cincinnati, you know, the most amazing ballpark to hit half the season. And I mean, just a better collection of talent, even with these injured guys, Nelvi Marte out and everyone out. I mean, it's still a much more appealing group than those Colorado Rockies, by the way.
Yeah, that's a bad, bad team.
Bryce Turang, dude's got 7 stolen bases already. He looks pretty good. Anything you're saying about that he's kind of a punch and Judy guy, or he's a defense first guy, you're still right. He is. He's only got 1 barrel. His average exit velocity is up, but again, this is over the course of 23 events, batted ball events, as opposed to like 300 from last season. So, even so, you got lucky for you know, the batting average and the stolen bases, right? You're not going to really get the power. You might get 10 home runs. Hey, that's great, but he's entrenched. He's going to play every day. This Milwaukee lineup that didn't seem all that fun or popular, this lineup looks really, really good. Contreras and Adames and Yelich. Like, this is a playoff team that gets the pitching going.
Yeah. I didn't own any Turang just because of the risk of the platoon going into the season, but he was cheap speed. He was going, I mean, past 300 and getting 7 steals right off the bat. I mean, it looks like he's on pace to, you know, going to steal about 50-60 bags if he gets the opportunity. You don't need more than 8 to 10 homers if a guy's going to steal like that for you. And, you know, he's sitting at the bottom of the order right now, but it could move up higher.
And then Edward Oliveras, this is your boy, the man, right?
Oh, I had him. I have him in every draft champions, which is a good thing. But I was taking him around 28 through 20 through 30 in all the fab leagues. And I cut bait when they signed Michael Taylor. I just thought the writing was on the wall, that he was going to be a fifth outfielder. And maybe it wasn't just the Royals. Maybe it's just he's something in the locker room, or he just sees that bad defensively. But he can hit. Will he continue to get the opportunity? Because I'm regretting giving up too soon, but the process was right. Maybe I can get him back, but the writing was on the wall for lack of playing time, and playing time is still king in fantasy.
And you and I kind of did a good job nailing it a little bit in the preseason about this kind of being an intriguing Pirates upstart. Like we talked about the sort of the two-sided horse where, you know, the front of it and is all pretty and the back is you know, like a kid's painting, but it's that front of that lineup with O'Neill Cruz and Reynolds and Ke'Bryan Hayes looked so good. The back didn't look so all that great, but even those guys in the back are performing, you know, Michael Taylor, you know, Connor Joe leading off against lefties, Oliveira smashing home runs. The pitching is off the hook. I mean, it's probably not that surprising. You put a couple of guys like Martin Perez and Marco Gonzalez, sort of those like boring type assets. You put them in a place like Pittsburgh, get in some Jaron Jones and Mitch Keller. I mean, this team looks good. I think the only issue right now is Bednar. Another 4 earned runs on Tuesday. It's not looking good. I think 12-team bidders are probably the Sharks are circling around Aroldis Chapman if there are any shares available. So Bednar was hurt in the preseason and appears to not be himself right now.
Yeah, I hope it's not because of an injury or nothing's lingering. It's just a lack of reps because I have too many shares of Bednar right now, and it's quite sad watching what he did today. It just, you know, that's kind of the immediate visceral emotional reaction that we get when your closer blows an opportunity, right? Because those saves are so precious, and hopefully keeps the job. Chapman is lurking, but Bednar is still the dude, I believe, but not a good start to the season.
And then we got Ronel Blanco. What a phenomenal story. And the Houston Astros, his schedule gets a little bit more difficult. The next 2 or 3 starts, I believe, aren't all that pretty on paper. I don't know if it's even, I mean, is this, I heard somebody say, or I think I saw someone say, it's like, it's the ultimate sell high, the ultimate sell high. Is it? Do we think it is?
30-year-old journeyman made 8 career starts before this year. Did have a pitch mix change, and he looks good. But amazing, I think. I don't know what it was, but I thought over 90% of the owners didn't start him in the 2-start week because of Texas, so they missed a no hitter, and then the follow up almost no hitter. There was some lucky fews that did, but I can't see this continuing, but I don't own any, so we shall see.
There's a wise man. He's an FSWA Hall of Famer, still with Yahoo all these years, Scott Pianowski. I don't think I've chatted with him in quite a bit of time, but he's kind of a wise man of wisdom. And one of the things I remember him saying is in a situation like that, you don't just say sell, just, you know, sell high, buy low. It's like, it's sell high for what, right? Because it's such a kind of vague term. Like, you know, yes, of course you sell high if depending on what the return is. If the return for a Ronel Blanco is, you know, I mean, no one's going to give you like Aaron Nola for him, but if someone's going to give you like Max Fried or George Kirby, then, you know, you jump at the opportunity, or even someone middling, right? I mean, not even middling, but like, just like, you know, one of those guys, I can't think of anyone off the bat. Oh, okay. Justin Steele, right? Coming back from a hammy in a couple of weeks, and someone offers you Ronel Blanco for Justin, you take Justin Steele pretty much, right? So it's just a matter of like what that answer is. So someone says, is he a sell high? It's like, it's for what? Like, what does that mean, sell high?
Yeah. In a trading league, everybody's got a price. Nobody's untouchable. And if somebody wants to give you someone you're higher than, I think you have to jump on it, because the Ronel Blanco is too unknown. The Justin Steele types, those guys in the middle range that Vlad was referring to, are very valuable, and we know who they are. There's a track record. So I would definitely rather have the guy with the track record rather than the pop-up guy that just threw a no-hitter out of nowhere.
By the way, as you were talking, I was sweating Pete Fairbanks's job. Miguel Sano was on deck, or was at the plate with a couple of guys on, and they were up 6-4, and Fairbanks was sweating. And I think his velo, or at least the pitch I saw, was down a little bit. But he got there. But it's shaky. I don't know. That whole course thing was kind of weird. So yes, Pete Fairbanks with the save, at least for now.
So my Jason Adam share did not come through yet.
Jason. Hey, you got it. Hey, but you got it. But you have to bid on the guys that have two first names and have the same name as you. It's just your guy.
I don't think that's a requirement yet, but if it works out, I'm going to make it one.
Before we talk about some possible underperform or guys that have been underperforming, anyone else that you wanted to bring up?
Tyler Anderson, the ghost of the Dodgers, Tyler Anderson, that was really good that year. He looks great, but I just don't see a scenario where it continues. Really overperforming everything around him. Nick Martini had that huge first week, but for the most part, like I talked about, it's 2 weeks of stats, 10 games, 11 games. Your guys that are struggling will be fine. The guys that are doing over their head will come back to earth. Everything will regulate to kind of the back of the baseball card, I like to call it.
Yeah, like in the case today of our best ball cut line points bids, and kind of overlooked Tyler Anderson at first, but he get in cut line, the bids are on Tuesday. It's only two bidding periods per season, and the Monday stats, Monday and Tuesday stats count. So if you see something good happen, you know, the most likely those players are going to go for even more. And so he recorded 25 fantasy points within the cut line format by getting that shutout and the win against the Rays on Monday. So that counts. So that obviously boosted his value, but that also was like, you know, to what end, to what point? Like, yes, I'll probably take him over. I would bid on him over the Paul Blackburn types, but maybe not over like, you know, Luis Gil, Heel, and definitely not over like a Max Meyer. Like, I know who Tyler Anderson is. I know he's not a guy that's not only not going to get shutouts every week like he did the first couple weeks, he's quite the opposite. It's going to kind of, you know, it's going to go the other way. The one thing Anderson had been good at throughout the course of his career was he usually had pretty decent control and managed a pretty solid walk rate and usually a good home run rate too. Kept the, you know, the ball in the park, never a big strikeout guy, but I don't think he will be as bad as last year when he had a 5.5 ERA, but he definitely will not be as good as he was with the Dodgers at a 2.5 ERA. So we're looking at probably like a 4.45, could be streamable in the right occasions in 15 teamers. But for the most part, I mean, come on, it's Tyler Anderson, and these Angels are kind of, you know, they're kind of riding a little bit of a good wave right now.
So you're saying it's not a Rick Porcello Cy Young year for Tyler Anderson?
No, not this year. Not this year, unfortunately.
I thought you might have had one of those gut feelings for me, Vlad.
Yeah, not, maybe with Reed Detmers. All right, let's talk. We kind of already talked about Kirby and Fried. I'm curious what you think about Nick Castellanos, because he's been absolute doo-doo, I guess you could say, as my four-year-old would say, doo-doo. He got a couple hits today on Tuesday.
I mean, Castellanos had a little bit of concern for me in the profile last year. The strikeout rate went up quite a bit. The swing and miss went up. He did produce. He's in an incredible lineup, and I think it's just a matter of time before he gets going. Maybe he's one of those warm weather hitters. I know the weather hasn't been too cold yet, but East Coast teams kind of definitely, the offense lacks the first month or two in the year, and then it kind of picks up once the heat picks up. So not sounding any alarms yet. What about yourself?
I think he's fine. I think he'll be okay. Where he was going, what, 100, 110 overall, I think he'll return that value. Philly will, they'll get going at some point. Their hot offense hasn't really been in sync. It's one of the best offenses in baseball. You even got guys like, just guys that get on base, good contact hitters like Alec Bohm and Bryson Stott. And you mix in Schwarber gets on base when he doesn't strike out, and usually a high walk rate. Add in a little Bryce Harper, Brandon Marsh, Trey Turner. It's a really, really good offense, and they'll get clicking at some point, like all together. And I mean, yeah, it's fine. So through his first 40 at bats, whatever. So he's hitting 115 or whatever. Or his 114 is already up close to 200 just after a two hit game. These things change really quickly, and almost makes me wish I was in trade leagues. Like, these are the type of scenarios where, man, I mean, I just don't have the time for it. I couldn't imagine. Like, if I was in a bunch of trade leagues, like, that's what I would be doing all day. I'd be like, you know, like one day when I win several millie makers like Dave Potts and, you know, NFBC championships and whatnot, I will just you know, do high stakes trade leagues and just like send trade offers all day. Like that's a job for me.
Everybody's got their dream job, Vlad.
Actually, I'm in the FSGA, the Fantasy Sports Gaming Association, the draft there. And Adam Young from FTN is my partner there. And we won the league last year. That was like the junior circuit. So I moved up to now back to the senior circuit. What was it? Oh, so I probably should have read the rules a little better. I'm just like play so much NFBC and obviously it's an honor. Like I'm in a league with like all these, you know, like Steve Gardner, Howard Kamen, like just all these great, people in the industry have been around for so long. And I didn't even realize it was a trade league. And so when we lost Josh Young and realized we have no third baseman, and this goes back to when I was talking about Wilmer Flores, I'm like, crap. I mean, it's only like Trey Lipscomb and Wilmer Flores are really the only third baseman we can bid on. Like even Jared Triolo is gone. I looked up like the league rules and realized that there was trading. So that's a little embarrassing, but I was like, Adam, let's look at these rosters. Let's see who's got like, you know, multiple third basemen. And so I reached out to Dr. Roto because he had like four guys. We couldn't get a deal together. I think I was like trying to pawn off Buxton. He wasn't having it. And then reached out to Steve Gardner and Howard Kamen. They have also four third basemen, and sent them a nice email, this whole proposal, this whole deal. And it was I even listed out like six or seven guys that, you know, deal was for. And I thought they'd be like, oh yeah, sure. Well, we'd be interested in these guys, that, whatever. And they're like, you know, thank you very much, but we're holding pat. We're happy with the guys we have. I was like, whoa, this is harder than I thought. And obviously I didn't think I'm going to pull one over on, you know, a couple of like industry veteran legends, but I thought maybe we'd be like, okay, there has to be some deal we can make here. But now they're like, oh, we're good. We're holding pat. So, trading is hard. That's my whole rambling for nothing. I can cut that part out. We can cut that part out, right?
Well, I mean, I'm in one trading league, and it's so hard to trade this early because guys are still stuck on the values they got in the draft. So to get fair value for a guy that's going good or going bad, there's no buying low. There's no selling high right now. And guys don't want to trade this early just because this is why I drafted him. Why would I let him go this quick? Yeah, so it is a challenge, and it is actually kind of a headache. So I don't spend much time on it.
Henry Davis, what's your concern level a couple days away from getting that catcher eligibility? One of the hottest guys in spring training, former first overall pick, pretty streaky guy. And then Joey Bart comes up and starts hitting off the bat. And Yasmani Grandal will be back at some point in the next week or two. So we got a situation, right? It's either Bart starts sucking again and he gets demoted, or Grandal isn't ready, or Henry Davis kind of moves to the outfield, but that's crowded. I don't really know how this will play out, but I hope it doesn't involve Henry Davis getting sent down.
Yeah. The thing that concerns me is that Davis is not playing any outfield when he's not catching. I really thought that could have helped his value, is keeping his bat in the lineup even when he wasn't behind the dish. But like you said, that outfield is so, it's got a lot of bodies, and he's not hitting right now. And, you know, as a Giant fan, watching Joey Bart go in there and hit, it's bittersweet. But I need Henry Davis to have that job. So he needs to start hitting when he gets the opportunity and kind of quiet down the Joey Bart. And then maybe they can release Grandal because they really don't need him at that point. But there's the concern level is higher than most players in there. The only one concern that I have more for right now is Victor Scott. Who I have a lot of, who looks like a worse version of Malik Smith.
Yeah, and maybe I am doing the whole sunk cost fallacy thing, because I didn't even really need like an overabundance of stolen bases. I don't know what gets into me sometimes in FAB where I just go a little extra when I know it's a long season. It's literally my biggest weakness as a fantasy player. It's like, I don't need to spend 180 on Victor Scott or 200 Scott. So why did I put that number in there? And I stayed within my range that I put out in the FAB article, but I didn't need to go on the higher end for him. And then, yeah, I get stuck holding the bag. Again, I try to be very kind of straightforward, the whole approach. I'm still kind of grasping on for hope, because Lars Nootbaar wasn't quite ready to come back. Dylan Carlson still, I think, not in baseball activities. Tommy Edmonds at least a few weeks away. And Victor Scott is continuing to play every day. Thank God we have a moron. I mean, I don't want to call him a moron. Let's not be negative here. But a not very bright manager like Ollie Marmol, who just continues to play him because he doesn't have any other center fielders right now. So Victor Scott's in that lineup every single day. And at some point, guess what happens? Like with every baseball player, he's not going to keep going, hitting nothing. I mean, Anthony Rendon at some point started hitting. And granted, Victor Scott is no Anthony Rendon as a hitter. But like at some point, like, Goldie works with you or Arenado, or just like something gets you going and you start hitting again. I know it's not that simple, but like it's not dead in the water. There's still a chance here.
Well, the nice thing for a rookie, he has the manager's praise, which is huge for rookies. The manager Marmol's been talking about his defense is elite and keeping them in games. He's saying he's not overmatched at the plate and he's going to get going. So, even just last year, I mean, that same manager basically said that their brand new free agent catcher acquisition wasn't going to play catcher for them anymore. So for him to have faith in a rookie definitely is giving him a longer leash than most rookies would have, but he's running out of time here. And we need him to start running, if you know what I mean.
Yes. By the way, St. Louis, Ivan Herrera, as soon as he steps in that lineup, he's not going to Wally Pip Wilson Contreras, but like Ivan Herrera, it needs to play. The guy needs to play. And I think it was a good sign. I think Wilson Contreras was back in the lineup. He'd been dealing with a wrist injury. He missed four games. Wilson Contreras DH'd and hit third on Tuesday, but Ivan Herrera was in the lineup as well. He just couldn't take his bat out because he's been hitting so well. What else is interesting of note is Ivan Herrera, when Contreras was out, was plugged in right into the middle of the lineup. He was hitting cleanup against the lefties. And then on Sunday, he was hitting cleanup again against a righty. So Ivan Herrera, if he's not available in 15 teamers, but he's kind of in that group with like him, Freddie Fermin, like the guys that if they had a full-time job to themselves could be a top 12 catcher. But I mean, he can even do that without even being the full-time catcher.
Yeah. Fun guy to watch. I actually picked him up, in a league. I'm stashing Danny Jansen and I got concerned when Contreras is coming back on Monday and then Contreras got scratched and then Herrera hit a home run. So
of course,
go from feeling like an idiot to feeling like a genius to maybe I'm just somewhere in the middle.
Hey, that's where all of us are. That's the area there, no matter
extremely
what we
average.
Yeah. No matter what we portray to be on Twitter. a couple more things here. I mean, obviously anyone here that you want to mention, but the last thing I wanted to mention was just the Minnesota Twins. They are not the White Sox. They will be fine. Do not worry about the Minnesota Twins. Their pitching is legit, like legit awesome rotation. Even Varland, he ran into the juggernaut that's the Dodgers offense in Dodger Stadium. Like, sorry, that stuff's going to happen. The hitting, they'll be fine too. Kepler's had a string of bad luck. He's on the IL now. Whatever. He sucks now, drop him, whatever. But like at some point, you'll be picking up Kepler again. At some point, Matt Wallner will go on a home run streak. At some point, Edouard Julien, you will forget that he is one of the worst hitters in baseball right now. And maybe he might even play against some lefties. But right now, as it stands, the only guy hitting on that team has been Alex Kirilloff, which is actually pretty hilarious considering he just could never stay healthy. But this team will be fine. I'm not too worried about him.
Yeah, my only worry is, I continue to say this, but I think Rocco Baldelli is the worst manager in sports. He platoons more than any team in the major leagues, and he's benching good players. And guys that are struggling, it's going to have a hard time get going if they're on the field every other day. So I have some minor concern for my Julien shares because he is just... he's struggling. He's a young guy. And then he sits on the bench to think about it, watching Kyle Farmer do nothing. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
And the other thing here with Minnesota is they've run into a tough stretch here. Also, the schedule has not been friendly. They've been facing a lot of lefties, where a lot of their sort of, the hitters that you kind of want to play are lefty bats. So they're not necessarily in the lineup. Julien, at least the last few days, they've played a lot of righties, but those last few days, they've been facing the Dodgers. They've been facing, good Guardians pitching. They ran into a little trouble against the Royals in that first series. So the schedule on paper hasn't looked good, and it's matched what we've seen. And at some point, it's going to get a lot better, and I think they'll be just fine.
And it's a wee bit cold in Minnesota this time of year, I heard.
Indeed. I mean, if you want things to get better, they're going to. So now Detroit, they're actually going to play. It's not going to get better in the short term. Over the next three series, they face the Tigers 7 times and the Orioles 3 times. And Detroit has pretty good pitching. So does Baltimore. But he eases up after that. They'll face the White Sox. Well, I guess Crochet is pretty good. But they'll face the White Sox and the Angels for like 2 straight weeks, basically. So things will get better for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it ebbs and flows. Long, long season.
Who do we wrap up with? Any other guys here to discuss?
I think our boy, the Italian Breakfast, coming off that shoulder injury. I think, you know, the alert flags have to be raised because historically shoulder injuries already sap power, coming from a guy that didn't have a ton of power. I still think he's going to be all right batting average wise, but I do worry about how many home runs he's going to hit, which might limit his run production.
Yeah, and he was in a tough draft spot, and especially with just the abundance of first basemen that were even going like after pick 300. Like, it was hard to justify a Vinny Pasquantino at 180 when Ty France was going to 320. Or, you know, they're just there were always sort of some kind of good deals later. And he's struggling. He's hitting a .120. But what's important to me with Pasquantino usually is the walks to strikeouts, and usually that's a pretty close ratio for him. At least it has been over the course of his minor league career and in the big leagues. And right now his walk rate is around 11%, K rate's around 13.5. So on that end, it looks pretty good. But right now, yeah, the ISO is a good old goose egg, and he's just, you know, everything's a ground ball rate, ground ball to the max. It's like almost a 60% rate. So yeah, for sure. A little bit of concern, and I think it's totally fine to, we shouldn't be tied to our draft capital when it comes to our starting lineup. Like, you have a Vinny Pasquantino, but then you have, you know, Ty France going to Cincinnati, for example, or whatever. Like, you know what to do in that case. You don't play Pasquantino because he owes you because you drafted him high or whatnot.
But he will hit a home run when he's on your bench. It never fails.
Absolutely. That's 100%.
Murphy's Law.
Well, this is fun. I'm sure it's not the first, you know, let's get more of them soapboxes. Let me get you kind of riled up and mad. Let's do, like, you know, a run through Twitter before we record our next week's podcast, get fired up. It's fun.
Oh, yeah, that was a good time. And, you know, just one more reminder, we're 10, 11 games into the fantasy season. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Put your head down, grind it out. You know, don't feel bad for yourself because you lost your ace. Don't feel bad for yourself because your second round hitter's not doing anything. A lot of work. That's why we do it, though, is for the grind. So enjoy it.
And remember, if you're not nice, karma's coming for you. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. For my co-host, Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.